and a mirror at the end with her waves on her shoulders. They held onto the railing and looked into the flash. Amira kept checking her email. As she waited for messages to load, she'd think, why did you try to be cute with this dumbass email thing? But when she saw that she had no new messages, she'd think, no, it's good he didn't come. He'd probably like Shawnee. It would have been weird. But when she saw him walk onto the second floor of Luca's, Amira saw why Kelly had not emailed her to get him at the door, and why he did not need her help getting in. Around 11 p.m., Kelly arrived with four friends, and these friends, to Amira's indisputable surprise, were all black. Kelly looked like he was being filmed for the intro of an extremely problematic music video. One of the men was wearing sunglasses. Two of them were wearing Timberlands. When Amira went to make introductions, she saw that Josepha had put her phone away. Shawnee had draped her curls over one shoulder, and Zara just squinted hard at her friend. One of Kelly's friends announced that they were getting drinks, and what did the ladies want? Together, the men went down to the bar, and when the last of their heads disappeared down the stairs, Zara said, really, bitch? Okay, you know what? It's whatever. I'm in a good mood. Amira blushed and sat down in the booth next to Shawnee. Josepha scooted into her right hip and the girl's heels clunked together beneath them. Don't you whatever me. Zara held up a pointer finger from the other side of Shawnee. Cause let me get this straight. It's okay when you do it. Is that right? Oh. Josepha started to laugh and pointed at Zara. Cause you went home with redhead guy from Shawnee's party. Shawnee remembered this and said, he was so nice. Zara placed a hand to her chest. Apparently, I can't swirl, but you can. You get a leather jacket and you better than everybody. Okay, okay, Amira laughed. I get it. I'm sorry. But you know what I meant. That guy you fucked with had a compass tattoo. That boy went down for a whole EP. Zara twirled one of her twists in her hands. I ain't seen or care about no tattoos. Shawnee sat up so she could see over the railing to the bar. Okay, but for real, Amira, that boy is fine. Amira followed Shawnee's gaze down to the first floor, where Kelly put both of his hands on the bar and leaned over it to talk to a blonde bartender. Already, Amira was madly jealous. It's not a big deal, she said. We met that night at the grocery store, and I just saw him on the train tonight. I did not think he'd roll up like this. Zara leaned in closer. That's the guy who filmed you that night. Girl, yes. Why you so sneaky? I didn't think he'd come. Still looking over the railing, Shawnee asked, is he wearing an Everlane sweater? Amira rolled her eyes. Why are you acting like I know what that is? Zara matched Shawnee's posture as she eyed Kelly and his friends. A new song came on, and Kelly began to nod his head and mouth the lyrics. He's like that one white guy at every black wedding who's like super hyped to do the Cupid Shuffle. Oh my God, Shawnee said. I fucking love the Cupid Shuffle. This is weird though, right? With a drink in her hand, Josepha trailed on. I mean, he's real cute or whatever, but does someone want to tell me why all his friends are black? Amira, Zara, and Shawnee rolled their heads toward their friend. Amira put a fist under her chin. I don't know, Sepha. Why are yours? First of all, rude. Josepha put a hand in Amira's face. Second of all, I just got my 23andMe results back, and I'm 11% West African. Thank you very much. Zara scrunched up her face and asked, Why are you trying to play one drop rule right now? And third of all, Josepha said, I'm serious. I hope he doesn't have a fetish or something. When I was on Match, all these old white guys were trying to touch my feet, asking me to call him Papi and shit. I hope he does try to touch some feet. Well done, sister. Zara high-fived Amira. I'm gonna support you in this because unlike some people, I am a good friend. I'm also gonna grind up on his friend with the fade. Josepha and Zara began to go back and forth over who would get to pretend like it was their birthday. Zara won the best 2 out of 3 in rock, paper, scissors, so when Kelly and his friends returned, they sang to her as she danced and blew out Josepha's lighter. Shawnee generously accepted the attention from 2 of the 4 men, one of whom actually was celebrating his birthday, and Josepha got another to arm wrestle her on the table. An hour later, Kelly tapped Amira and said, Okay, miss, I owe you a drink. Kelly followed Amira downstairs and stood while she sat at the bar. Amira could tell that her teeth and lashes were glowing pink from the lights that bordered the counter's edge. Kelly purchased Amira's 4th drink of the evening and then clinked his glass to hers. Cheers to you, he said, for having reserves of patience I have never known. After she thanked him and took a sip, Kelly said, Tell me you aren't in college. Amira crossed her legs. No, I'm not in college. You must be a dancer then, right? Kelly sat his glass back on the bar. You must be classically trained to do moves like... He brushed his shoulders off with pouted lips. Oh, wow, it's like that? Amira laughed. That was a very special occasion. The kid I babysit, someone egged her house. Her mom wanted me to take her while they dealt with the police, so I could go to the grocery store and see more police. Get it? I got it, he said. And that guy wasn't a real cop, but okay. So what do you do when you're not babysitting? Amira rested her elbow on the bar and grinned. Are you gonna ask me what I do for fun next? Maybe. That's super lame. Okay, but is way better than asking how many siblings you have. Fine. Well, she said, I work as a transcriptionist and do some clerical work at the Green Party Philadelphia office uptown. Really? Kelly said. You don't strike me as a Green Party person. I just type things. How fast can you type? I do 125. Words per minute? Mm-hmm. Are you serious? Amira smiled. Dead ass. Damn, I could definitely hook you up if you're looking for more work, Kelly said. My office pays a shit ton for transcription. Maybe I make a shit ton right now. Ooh, girl, you drunk, Amira told herself. The jacket on her back and $100 bills in her purse were giving her bravados she couldn't contain. Kelly held his hands up and said, Fair. What's up with that? Do you work in HR or something? She asked. The night I met you, you were like, you should write an op-ed. Like, yeah, okay, sure. Kelly leaned on the bar and stared upward at the bottles and bitters. I did say that. Huh. He squinted at Amira and asked her quite honestly, Am I an asshole? You? Oh, for sure, Amira nodded. I mean, I don't know from experience, but like, just statistically speaking, 100%. But it's chill. It's chill, he grinned. Yeah, kinda. I think we should get a cab. Kelly said this into her ear. It came out in a strangely offhanded way that sounded very hilarious in Amira's haze. It was as if he were saying, I think you're gonna need some stitches. Or, unfortunately, your card was declined. Amira laughed and picked up her drink. With her straw in her mouth, she said, "You're lit." Kelly folded his hands and said, "So are you, miss." In the elevator up to Kelly's apartment, Amira checked her phone. "Oh, okay, bye, bitch," Zara texted. "Trap, trap, 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 get that L.L. Bean dick, girl." At the other side of the elevator, Kelly watched her with his back against the railing. Then he stood up straight and said, "Can I come over there or what?" Inside, on a couch that felt pricey and firm, Amira sat facing Kelly on his lap as he held the back of her thighs. The space smelled boyish, and also like laundry done with detergent that was marked unscented. Above Kelly, hung tightly against his living room wall, was a massive framed blueprint of Allentown, Pennsylvania. Amira kissed him in the glow from an opened window until he pulled back and whispered, "Hey, hey, hey." Amira said, "Hmm?" Kelly rested his head on the back of the couch. "You're not like 20 years old, are you?"
"No, I'm 25.
"Yikes. Okay." He put his hands behind his head. "I'm 32. Amira stood up to remove her pants.
"Okay.
"That's 7 years older than you."
"Uh-huh."
Amira laughed once as she moved forward to undo his belt buckle.
"You're like really smart."
"Okay, miss," Kelly laughed. "I'm just making sure." In between strokes and kisses, Kelly pulled out a condom and placed it on the couch cushion to his left. It sat there like a peace offering or a panic button, a plastic symbol of consent. At one point, he lifted her hips and told her, "Sit up for me," before he pressed her pelvic bone to his mouth. Amira said what she recognized as a very white expression.
"Oh, you don't have to."
By this, she meant, "I'd rather not return the favor when you're done." Kelly seemed to understand her appeal. He laughed and said, "I know," before he took her in his mouth again. He stopped once more to say, "Unless you're not cool with it." To which Amira quickly replied,
"No, I am."
She balanced her hands and one knee on the back of the couch. For the second time that night, she thought,
"You know what? Fuck it."
And she took hold of the back of his head. On her way back down, Amira reached for the condom. That she stayed on top seemed implicit and implied. Later, she was still quite drunk as she pulled out her phone and texted Zara. "Where you at?" Kelly had put on shorts and a t-shirt, and he brought a glass of ice water to her on the couch. He went back to the kitchen to drink his own as he looked at her across an island counter. The clock on his microwave read 1:10. Amira reached for her shoes.
"May I please have an Uber and a snack?"
Kelly reached for his phone.
"You may have an Uber, but you get a snack when I get your number."
Amira laughed. To her right, next to the record player, was a milk crate full of albums.
"Why do you have the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack?" she asked.
Other titles Amira could see were Chaka Khan and Otis Redding. Kelly sighed, his eyes on his phone.
"Because I have the music tastes of a middle-aged black woman," he said.
Amira rolled her eyes, but Kelly didn't catch it. Maybe Josepha was right, and he did have a fetish. Amira almost asked him how many times he'd used that line, but instead she said,
"You have nice things."
She was loose and tired and delighted. She looked around the room and took in the record player set, a chair that looked like it wasn't from IKEA,
a black coffee maker on the kitchen counter that looked like it was from a wedding registry, and a bike and a tire pump leaning against the wall. Her head rolled to her left. You have nice adult things in here.
You don't seem like a thief, but if you are, you're terrible at it.
Hassan will pick you up in 3 minutes. Allentown, Amira said. She stared upside down at the name of the city above her head and blinked as the letters went in and out. Who do I know from Allentown?
You know me from Allentown.
Kelly made his way over to her, placed a bag of popcorn in her lap, and said,
Let's start with your area code.
Amira gave Kelly her phone number as she snacked on popcorn, her right arm draped deliriously over her head. On the blueprint behind her, 2 streets over from where her pinky hung, was the place Kelly Copeland completely ruined Alex Murphy's senior year. Back in the spring of 2000, before she became Alix Chamberlain. Part 2. 6. In the vestibule of the Chamberlain home sat a small teak table near the front door. On top was a porcelain cup that collected change, a wooden trough holding 3 sprouting succulents, and an upright phone charger from CB2 that was plugged into the wall behind it. In the past few weeks, Alix had developed what she knew was an awful and invasive habit of returning home, closing the door quietly behind her, bending at the hip, and looking at Amira's phone. The small entryway was protected by another door that entered into the main foyer, which made Alix feel as though she wasn't quite at home and that she wasn't exactly looking through the phone. She didn't know the passcode, and she would never use it if she did, but the lock screen of Amira's phone was always filled with information that was youthful, revealing, and completely addicting. She never took Amira's phone off the charger, and she rarely pressed any buttons. Messages and notifications would light up on their own. But 3 times a week, she scrolled with her middle finger as she listened to Amira cook dinner upstairs and tell Briar to blow in case it was hot. A month had gone by since the night at Market Depot, and in that time, Alix had developed feelings toward Amira that weren't completely unlike a crush. She became excited to hear Amira's key in the door. She felt disappointed when it was time for her to leave. And when Amira laughed or spoke without being prompted, Alix felt like she had done something right. The times when this happened were few and far between, which was why Alix kept peeking at her sitter's cell phone. She would have just checked Amira's social media channels instead, but from what she'd gathered from searching, Amira didn't have any. Amira had a group text titled Siblings, where her brother and sister sent songs, memes, and trailers for upcoming movies. Amira was constantly texting Zara, labeled Queen Zara, who would often reply in clipped messages, one right after the other. No, stop, don't you dare, I cannot. Zara and Amira went out nearly every weekend, and many of their texts discussed the logistics. One afternoon, Amira must have just placed her phone on the charger moments before Alix arrived, because it sat unlocked and waiting. Alix didn't even have to scroll. Amira had texted, What are you wearing? To which Zara replied, Slut. And Amira had responded, Cool, same. When Alix went upstairs, Amira was playing on the floor with Briar and saying, Okay, now you have to tell me your second favorite vegetable. Sometimes there were no conversations available for Alix to read, but there was always paused music. Some of the names Alix recognized, like Drake and Janet Jackson, Outkast and Usher, but most of them were strangers like J. Cole and Tyga, Big Sean and Travis Scott. Alix ended up Googling things like, Is Childish Gambino a person or a band? How do you pronounce the name SZA? One evening, Alix memorized the name of a song and later Googled it in her room. Alix listened to the first verse in her headphones, which began with, "Let a nigga try me, I'ma get his whole motherfucking family." Alix's eyebrows rose up into her forehead. She looked over at Catherine next to her and whispered, "Oops." But out of all the information she'd gathered in the past few weeks, what was most intriguing as a future point of connection was the fact that Amira was definitely seeing someone new, someone she'd labeled in her phone as Keenan and Kel. One afternoon, Alix saw this on her way out. He'd said, "Maybe next time let me know that you don't drink coffee, weirdo." On a Wednesday evening, he'd said, "Is basketball something you'd be interested in?" And one time, Amira had sent a screenshot of her conversation with him to Zara, to which Zara replied, "That boy doesn't play." The messages between Amira and this new person were of that cool and careful variety that only exists at the beginning of something, as you try to exude spontaneity and effortless humor and space out responses to appear busy and even-keeled. Alix was dying to ask Amira about him, to know if his name was Keenan, Kel, or neither. She wanted to cross a threshold where Amira would offer up information on her own, and more importantly, trust Alix to keep it. And tonight, after seeing Amira's newest message, "Excited to see you tonight, Miss Tucker," inside her dirty and rubbery pink phone case, Alix decided to make this happen. Alix walked upstairs into the kitchen. Briar looked up from her drawing and said, "Mama, Mama, this is not a scary ghost, okay?" Alix put her purse on the counter and realized that the room had turned very sweet and warm. That morning, she had put out pumpkins and gourds at the center of the table and hung fall leaves, collected from the backyard, over the windows that looked out onto the street. Briar colored a picture of a very friendly ghost next to a plate of cucumbers, garbanzo beans, and plain pasta. On the fridge were new art projects: a googly-eyed witch made out of felt, and a purple paper that read "Boo." The letters were colored in so nicely on one side that it was clear Amira had helped Briar complete it. Alix took off a drapey cardigan sweater, kissed Briar's cheek, and received Catherine from Amira, who was already holding the baby up. "You guys have a good day?" "Yeah." Amira picked at dried food on the knee of her jeans. "I think we did pretty good, huh, B?" Briar held up a crayon and said, "You do it." Amira sat down next to her. "I do what now?" "Let's say please, Bri," Alix said. "Amira," she added, "do you drink wine?" Amira carefully accepted a crayon from Briar. She blinked and said, "I mean, yeah." Alix took two glasses from a cupboard and thought, "Yeah, you do." She sat down, and with a bottle of wine in between her legs, she somehow managed to uncork the bottle while holding Catherine. When Catherine looked up at her, Alix said, "Hi, did you miss me or what?" Alix told Amira she could take the wine glass into the bathroom with Briar, that she did it all the time. She hadn't eaten since lunch. She'd lost 5 pounds since her very loving and supporting intervention. And as she sipped her glass of wine, cleaned up toys from the kitchen table, and listened to Amira give Briar a quick bath, she sensed those lax and wonderful feelings of decorum leaving her body. She lit two candles on the kitchen counter. She turned on a playlist with Fleetwood Mac and Tracy Chapman, and as she turned off the bright kitchen lights and left the chandelier blushing over the table, Alix recognized that she was very much courting her babysitter. But the evening reminded her of Fridays with Rachel, Jody, and Tamara. She hadn't poured a glass of wine for another woman in months. Amira emerged with a few picture books beneath her arm, a glass half full, and Briar in tow, changed into her pajamas and wrapped in her tattered white blanket. Amira stopped at the kitchen counter and took another sip of her wine.
"This is really good," she said.
"I like it too." From the table, Alix held up her glass and looked at the color. In her other arm, Catherine was receiving a bottle, which Alix administered with one hand.
"Are you a wine person or no?"
"I mean, I like it," Amira said.
She set her glass at the other end of the table, then took the books from underneath her arm and set those down too.
"But I'm used to drinking, like, boxed wine, so yeah, I'm no connoisseur."
There were moments like this that Alix tried to breeze over, but they got stuck somewhere between her heart and ears. She knew Amira had gone to college. She knew Amira had majored in English. But sometimes, after seeing her paused songs with titles like Dope Bitch and Y'all Already Know, and then hearing her use words like connoisseur, Alix was filled with feelings that went from confused and highly impressed to low and guilty in response to the first reaction. There was no reason for Amira to be unfamiliar with this word, and there was no reason for Alix to be impressed. Alix completely knew these things, but only when she reminded herself to stop thinking them in the first place.
"Well, I used to be a boxed wine fan myself," Alix said.
"But you know I didn't buy this, right?"
Amira sat down and settled Briar on her lap.
"Hmm? Oh, yeah. I don't really buy wine anymore. Or a lot of other things."
Alix took another sip.
"I've been doing this for years. I just write a wine company and say that I'm doing an event and I'm testing out wines. And then they send me a few bottles for free. This one is from," she turned the bottle's label toward her, "Michigan, I think."
"So does that mean you have an event coming up?"
"When my book comes out, I will."
Alix winked.
Amira laughed and said, "Dang, okay."
"I read this now," Briar announced, lifting up a board book. "I read this one."
Amira said, "Okay, go for it."
Briar tolerated being read to during the day, but Alix's child was the only toddler she knew of who didn't enjoy partnered story time before bed. Instead, Briar liked to be held as she read to herself before her eyes cast a sleepy focus on the pages in front of her. She constantly shushed the person holding her, even when they hadn't said a word. Alix tried to hold her voice at a smooth level to keep Briar happy and keep her sitter talking.
"Are you doing anything fun tonight?"
Amira nodded.
"Just going to dinner."
"Do you know where?"
Amira crossed her arms over Briar's lap.
"This Mexican place called Gloria's?"
"Gloria's,"
Alix clarified.
"Is that the one that's BYOB and really loud?"
"Mm-hmm.
I've gone there."
"That's fun. Oh, you should take this with you."
Alix flicked the wine bottle. "I can't have more than a glass since I'm still pumping." When Amira said,
"Really?"
Briar looked up at her and said,
"Shh, no, Mira, no, no."
Amira placed a finger in front of her mouth, and Briar turned the page. Amira mouthed,
"Thank you."
And Alix said,
"Of course."
"This is good," Alix thought.
"We aren't there yet, but we're getting there."
Alix knew that her aspirations for a relationship with Amira were possibly too high because of what she'd seen with her girlfriends and their sitters. Rachel and her nanny, Arnetta, often discussed their divorces, their least favorite children in Hudson's class, and the most attractive fathers. Tamara once took the day off from work and allowed her kids to skip the first half of school to watch their beloved sitter Shelby have a speaking role on a daytime soap opera. And Jody was always picking up scarves and lotions because her sitter, Carmen, wore things like that, or she might want to try them. Elise didn't know what Amira liked, or what she didn't like, or how she stayed so skinny, or if she believed in God. It wouldn't happen all at once, but she had to keep trying, even if it meant being the first to speak at every silence. And with Amira, there were many. "Are you going there with girlfriends?" Amira smiled and shook her head no. Alix let a cartoonish, gossipy expression go into her eyes. She said, "Ooh." And Amira laughed. Her lips came together in a flirtatious secrecy. "Well, come on. Is he cute?" Amira nodded in thoughtful consideration. She took one of her hands up next to her face and made her fingers flat as she whispered, "He's really tall." "Yes," Alix said. Amira laughed again. Alix felt like Amira's laughter was still backed by a small token of toleration, but she didn't care. This conversation was better than any of the ones she'd had with Peter's co-workers. She rocked Catherine and said, "Where'd you meet him?" Briar slammed the first book shut and moved to the second. Amira ruffled her bangs. "We met on the train." "Really? That's cute." In her arms, Catherine had started to fall asleep, but her lips continued in a furious rhythm for a now empty bottle. Alix placed the bottle on the table and stuck her pinky in her daughter's mouth. "Is it your first date?"
"That's for the horsies," Briar said into her book. "We need a map."
"It's like the fourth?"
"Shh, Mira," Briar said.
"Okay, shh,"
Amira whispered back. Alix shook her head and rolled her eyes. "Sorry." Amira mouthed,
"It's fine."
There was a very small window of time where Catherine would fall right asleep in her crib, and Alix knew that this was it, but she didn't want to break the moment just yet. She couldn't ask what his name was. That would make her sound so old. And she couldn't ask what she really wanted to know, if Amira had slept with him yet. Or if sleeping with someone before they were together was a thing Amira did, if sleeping with someone for her meant anything at all. It was officially 6 minutes after 7 o'clock, the latest Amira had ever stayed. Alix knew she could ask one more question before she had to let her go. "Do you think it could be serious?" Amira slumped and laughed. "I don't know," she said. "He's cute, but I'm not trying to get, like, wifed up anytime soon." This sentiment made Alix squeal inside. She wanted to ask Amira when her mother had gotten married and tell her that her own mother had been 25. She wanted to know if Amira had had serious relationships before and what this new guy did for a living. But Briar's whispers had turned into nods, and Amira placed a hand on the child's forehead so she wouldn't bang it into the table. Phil Collins started pouring from the speakers. Both of their glasses had turned transparent and empty. Alix did 2 long nods and said, "Good for you." She touched the wine bottle, stood with the baby in her arms, and said, "I'm going to put this by your bag." 7. There was a 2-story Starbucks near the Chamberlain House where freelancers and college students camped out for hours. After babysitting, Amira typically walked to the second level, seemingly to meet other classmates and friends, and changed her clothes in the single bathroom. Tonight, over jeans, she changed into a white t-shirt, oxblood-colored booties, and Shawnee's maroon varsity jacket with a textured letter S on the front left side. Amira applied lipstick in the mirror, put her hair into a ponytail, and texted Kelly, "I'm late. I'm sorry. I'm running." Gloria's was always at max capacity. There were permanent Christmas lights on the walls, along with hanging sugar skulls, roses, and dense patterned blankets. Amira stepped through couples and groups waiting outside, and past a hostess calling, "Reuben, party of six." When her eyes adjusted inside, she saw Kelly seated in a corner. "I'm so sorry."
"You're fine, you're fine."
Kelly touched her elbow and kissed the side of her face. When he pulled back, he smiled and said,
"Is it weird if I say you smell like a bath?"
Kelly Copeland was born in Allentown, Pennsylvania. He had an older sister who had one child and two younger brothers who worked at the same post office his father had worked at for 28 years. Kelly made a huge effort to avoid screens after 10 p.m. He read only print books, and before bed, he wore embarrassingly large, orange-tinted glasses that were called blue blockers. He spent half his day staring at a computer, coding and creating interfaces for gyms, yoga retreats, physical therapy sessions, and spin classes that required their participants to sign up using apps with campy copy and push notifications. Amira knew that Kelly had broken his collarbone twice, that he became irrationally furious when people didn't hear their names being called out at coffee shops, and that he was grossed out by the thought of drinking whole milk. But what she didn't know was what it was like to sleep with him a second time. 4 days after their night at Luca's, Kelly asked Amira if she could get coffee before she went to work. Amira screenshotted his request and sent it to Zara, who replied, "I can't tell if you're getting hired or dumped, RN." Coffee with Kelly felt strangely formal. It was as if they were pretending that they hadn't had sex the last time they saw each other, that she hadn't repositioned his hands away from her hair. He'd said sorry twice, and she'd said it was fine. And that he hadn't very cutely removed the remote control he'd sat on, placed it on the side table and said, "Sorry, as you were." In a very trendy place with lots of natural light and $4 cold brews, Amira kept expecting Kelly to give her a promotion or ask her about a time when she had to be part of a team. But he asked her about where she was from, who the most embarrassing person she followed on Instagram was. She didn't have an Instagram account. His was a pet raccoon. And if she ever, while doing something very ordinary in her day, suddenly remembered a dream she'd had the night before. If Kelly had ever met Amira's mother, she would have said something along the lines of, "That boy likes to talk." Kelly definitely did that thing where he asked her questions with the intention of explaining his own answer afterward. But he did plenty of listening on his own, and Amira didn't mind. Kelly was silly in a way that wasn't loud or obnoxious. He once initiated a game of guessing what people were listening to on their headphones as they walked by. Another time, after passing two crying babies, he'd looked at Amira and said, "Breakups are the worst, am I right?" And once, as they were leaving a basketball game behind a small child singing "The Song That Never Ends," Kelly whispered in Amira's ear, "I will give you $75 to take your Coke and dump it on that kid's head, but you have to do it right now." Amira settled in across from him, removed Shawnee's jacket, and took him in. "I would have been very on time," she said, "but my boss has been really into asking me questions and wanting to talk." Kelly looked back down to the menu and used the candlelight to see. "Is she afraid you're gonna sue her for sending you to the whitest grocery store in Philadelphia?"
"I have no idea."
"Oh, but wait." Amira reached behind her seat and into her bag that hung off the side. She retrieved the recorked bottle of wine that Mrs. Chamberlain had set near her charging phone. "She did give me this, though." Kelly pulled out his phone and used the light to read the label.
"Your boss just gave this to you?"
"She asked if I wanted some, and then she was like, take it."
"This looks extremely expensive," Kelly said. "Do you mind if I look it up?"
"No, go ahead." Amira reached for a chip and dipped it into salsa. "She didn't even buy it. She writes wine companies and tells them that she has an event coming up, and then they just send her shit."
"Seriously?"
Kelly's face lit up with the brightness from his phone.
"What does she do again?"
"She's a writer," Amira said.
and because she had recently Googled Mrs. Chamberlain and saw pictures of her with college-aged students, Amira added, and maybe a teacher? I don't know. She's writing a history book that's coming out next year.
Holy shit.
Kelly looked at Amira and squinted. This is a $58 bottle of Riesling. Amira said, damn. But she wasn't surprised. Mrs. Chamberlain had expensive tastes that she never openly acknowledged. Instead, she enjoyed telling Amira about the bargains she acquired. She divulged the exact price of a rug that was a steal, or she'd say she felt good about finding a cheap flight for Christmas. Amira couldn't help but wonder why Mrs. Chamberlain couldn't feel good paying full price for things when she could obviously afford it. Amira often looked up the cost of things that came from Mrs. Chamberlain's home, suggestions, and lifestyle. In every one of her purses was a tube of mascara called Juice Beauty, which came in at $22 each. She'd once stayed at a hotel in Boston that Amira discovered was $368 a night on weekdays. And one day, when Amira explained that she'd bought Briar new shorts after she sat in mud, Mrs. Chamberlain dug into her wallet with an urgent apology. Let me pay you for the shorts. Will $30 cover it? Amira had bought the packet of shorts at Walgreens, and they were $10.99 for two. When Amira relayed this interaction to Zara, Zara was beside herself that Amira didn't accept the surplus. The fuck is wrong with you? She'd said. You tell her, yes. The shorts cost $30 exactly. You are very welcome. Goodbye. Well, Kelly handed the bottle of wine back across the table. I brought beers because I thought that we were honest, working-class people. But if I'd known you were trying to seduce me...
Right. Uh-huh.
Amira smiled around the chip in her mouth. This was another thing that she decided she would let Kelly get away with. Considering himself working class. Kelly worked at one of those fancy offices where everyone sat in the same huge room with plush headphones on, and there was unlimited cereal and LaCroix. But instead of reminding him of this, and the fact that he lived above a CrossFit in Fishtown, she said, not gonna lie, it's the best wine I've ever had. They ended up drinking the beers because Gloria's had a rule that you couldn't drink anything that was already opened. Amira slipped it back into her bag and Kelly said, we'll work on that later. They talked about their days, but underneath it all, Amira kept thinking, if you don't fuck me tonight, I'm gonna be livid. It seemed, and this was just her opinion that was backed by Zara's confirmation, that Kelly was still slightly hung up on their age difference. In the same way that white women were often overly accommodating to her when she found herself in specific white spaces, dental offices, Oscar parties in which she was the only black attendant, every Tuesday and Thursday at the Green Party office. Kelly was overcompensating for the implications of their age difference by taking Amira to places that were completely unsexy, and ending the night kissing the space next to her ear. Amira had been surprised by how rhythmic and chemical their first night together had been. This, in her opinion, usually took time. But after two dates of, have you ever been to Europe? And what would you do if you won the lottery? She was ready to go back to his place. On his couch that first night, Amira hadn't thought of Briar, or her impending health insurance problem, or even the fact that her rent would be going up by $90 as soon as the new year began. Kelly held his arms up behind his head, then quickly removed them as a waiter stopped by to deliver their plates. So, I think it's time you told me about the losers you dated before you met me, he said. Amira laughed. Oh, it's that time? She set her beer back on the table. Mm-hmm. And also what they're doing now and how miserable they are without you. Oh, wow. Okay. She readjusted in her seat. Well, I dated someone this summer for a few months, which was fine for a minute,
But then he started to send me motivational quotes all the time. And I was like, nah, I can't do this shit with you. I need to see at least one of them. Well, I probably deleted them. Amira cut into her enchiladas and tried to remember. But yeah, he texted me all these pictures and quotes that were like, Michael Jordan didn't make his high school basketball team. And I was always like, okay, and? All right, so no quotes for you. Do you want another? Kelly pointed to the bucket of beers and Amira nodded. I dated a musician for a year in college, and that was fine, but dumb. I think he's touring with some band now and tuning their guitars. Kelly finished chewing and said, why do I feel like that band is like the Red Hot Chili Peppers or something? Please, I know who that is, Amira smirked. And then I dated a guy for like 10 months from high school into college, but it was long distance for the second half, so that was dumb too. Huh. Kelly wiped his face with his napkin and set his hands on the table. So you haven't had like a long, serious relationship? Amira smiled as she chewed. Well, I haven't had a long, serious life, so no. Is this you trying to tell me that you were married with kids or something? No. Why do I have the impulse to say, not that I know of? Amira faked a gag and said, please don't. I know, ignore that. Kelly shook his head and started over. My last girlfriend and I met in college, but dated years after. She now delivers babies on a reservation in Arizona. I had a girlfriend for 2 years at the end of college, and we say happy birthday or Merry Christmas sometimes. I think she lives in Baltimore. I had a girlfriend for a little while during my freshman year. We're still cool, and you went all the way back to high school, so I guess I gotta play too. When I was 17, I had a girlfriend who was the richest girl in town. Amira crossed her legs. How rich are we talking? Kelly raised a finger. I'll tell you how rich. We took a school trip to Washington, D.C. She was the grade above me, and like 30 of us were on the same plane ride. She was the first one on the plane, and I was right behind her. And after she found her seat, she set her luggage down in the aisle. And then she just sat down, without putting it away. Amira's head dipped, and her ponytail swung. Did she expect you to do it for her? No, Kelly leaned into the table. She expected people on the plane to do it. I opened the overhead, and she was like, don't mess with the plane. She'd never been on a plane where the staff didn't put your luggage away for you. Are there planes like that? Evidently in first class. Oh, shit, Amira said. Does she own her own plane now? Probably. I'm fairly certain she's in New York. I just remember that, like, well, this sounds weird, but it was one of those loss of innocence moments where things kind of click, you know? And I had a lot of moments like this with her. That's another story. But I remember that most of my classmates had never been on a plane and probably wouldn't again for a long time. And here's this girl who travels in first class and doesn't understand why there's no legroom. And my 17-year-old mind was like, oh, hey, people live very different lives. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm, Amira said. Yeah, this is like the opposite, but when I was little, I went to this girl's house for a sleepover, and when I went into the bathroom, there were three huge cockroaches in the middle of the floor. I screamed, but this girl was like, oh, you just shoo them out of the way. As she said this, Amira flicked her napkin gently in imitation, as if she were cutely herding very tiny sheep. And I was like, you do what? And when I think back, I'm like, okay, yeah, that girl was mad poor. I think she and her sister slept in the same twin bed. But at the time, the cockroaches seemed like a bigger deal. It shook me. I was like,
You live like this? And now I'm like, oh, wait, most people live like this.
Eek, exactly. That's a really good one.
Kelly wiped his mouth, cringed, and nodded.
Okay, yeah, I have another one. When I was little, my little brother loved that show, Moesha. You remember that show?
Of course I remember that show.
Yeah, that makes sense, because you're closer to my little brother's age.
Amira made a face and said,
cool, Kelly.
Sorry. So, yeah, anyway, my whole family was sitting around the table at dinner, and out of nowhere, my little brother, who was like six, goes, Mom, why is Moesha nigger shit?
Under the mariachi music that suddenly seemed quite loud, Amira's eyes went wide and her mouth twisted as if she'd found a hair in her food. Kelly went on.
My mom was like, what?
And my brother goes, Michael's dad told me to turn it off because,
well, I'm not going to repeat it, but he obviously had no idea what that meant. But I was older, so I did.
And I saw this kid's dad all the time. And I was like, holy shit. You're a bad man, Michael's dad. I'm looking at evil when I see you at school. Amira stared at Kelly, and her heart started to double. The two of them had only discussed race once, and barely. At the basketball game, a group of black teens saw Kelly hand Amira her ticket, and one, very much wanting to be heard, said, that's a damn shame. Kelly did a very cute half salute in their direction and said,
okay, thank you, sir. Thank you for your service.
When they made it to their seats, Kelly sat with his legs spread and leaned into her ear.
Can I ask you a question?
Amira nodded.
Have you ever dated?
He trailed off, and Amira thought, oh, Lord. She crossed her legs, thinking, it's whatever. Let's just watch the game.
Have you ever dated?
Kelly started again.
Someone who wasn't so tall?
Amira laughed and shoved his shoulder. Boy, stop. Kelly raised his shoulders in mock concerned defense.
It's a legitimate question. Would your parents be mad if you brought home a tall guy?
Amira laughed again. She didn't call him out on stealing that joke from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Maybe that was part of the joke. They never discussed it again. Amira had dated one white guy before and repeatedly hooked up with another during the summer after college. They both loved bringing her to parties, and they told her she should try wearing her hair naturally. And suddenly, in a way they hadn't in the first few interactions, these white men had a lot to say about government-funded housing, minimum wage, and the quotes from Martin Luther King Jr. about moderates, the ones that people don't want to hear. But Kelly seemed different. Kelly Copeland, with his dad-like humor and exaggerated expressions, and his affinity for saying the same word three times, hey, 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 listen, no, could apparently acknowledge that he was dating a black woman, and that she could appreciate a good story over the need for decorum. But still, shouldn't he have said the N-word instead? Maybe save the whole thing for the seventh or eighth date? Amira couldn't tell. Sitting across from him, she wrestled with feeling moderately appalled that he had said the whole thing, with that painfully distinctive hard R sound at the end. But as she watched the veins in his hands move as he took a last bite, she settled on, you know what? I'ma let you get away with that too. What did Michael's dad look like?
I mean, I'm sure he looks like most dads in Allentown.
Kelly put his fork at the side of his plate.
But now when I think of him, I picture him in a cowboy hat on a front porch with a...
Amira reached across the table to stop him before he did another impersonation. She lowered her voice and asked, do you want to go back to your place? Later in Kelly's bedroom, he sat up in bed and said, "We forgot to drink the wine." He put shorts on and walked out to the kitchen. In a t-shirt of his that read Nittany on the front, Amira got up to pee. She took a selfie in Kelly's medicine cabinet mirror and sent it to Zara, who replied, "I can't stand you, RN." It was 11:46 p.m. Kelly retrieved two glasses and set them on the island counter at the center of his kitchen. Amira brought the bottle wrapped in a purple plastic bag and stood at the other side. "Little Lulu's Ballet Academy," Kelly read. He removed the bag and set the wine on the counter. "That sounds like a complete nightmare."
"It's not. I take Briar every Friday and it's like my favorite thing."
"This is the one I saw at the grocery store?"
"Mm-hmm. She's terrible at it."
Amira stretched her arms up over her head and felt the bottom of the t-shirt begin to reveal her behind. "All the other girls are very shy and graceful, but Briar's always yelling that she wants a grilled cheese and shit. Next week is our last class. It's a Halloween party, and we are very excited about it." Kelly poured the wine into the two glasses. "Will you be dressing up?"
"I will be a cat, and Briar will be a hot dog."
"Nice. That classic cat and hot dog combination. Are you ready for this?" Kelly placed a glass in front of her. "Oh, wait, you already tried it. Am I ready for this?" "Yes, yes I am." With his eyes on Amira, Kelly did a very showy swirl of the wine in his hand. He took a sip, let it hit the back of his throat, and said, "Oh, wow." He nodded as he placed it back on the counter. "Shit, yeah, this tastes like a country club."
"I told you. It almost makes me sad because I'll probably never have it again."
Amira leaned her forearms onto the counter. "Do you think your high school girlfriend is drinking this in first class right now?" Kelly laughed.
"Probably, yes."
He eyed Amira before he added, "You want to know how I broke up with her?"
"Yes."
"It's awful," he warned. "You can't leave after I tell you this. There was, like, a lot of other bullshit involved with her and how she wrote me letters all the time and all this other stuff. But when I actually ended it, I said, I think it would be best if we went our separate ways and that those paths never again connected." Amira covered her mouth. Against her palm, she said, "No."
"Yep."
Kelly took another sip and said, "I thought I was very cool."
"What is wrong with you?"
"I was 17 years old."
"Yeah, I was 17 once too, bro."
Okay. I don't know. She wrote me all of these very flowery and poetic letters all the time, and I think I felt like I had to break up with her in the same elevated tone. But it did not go down that way. And I'd like to say that that was the dumbest thing I ever did in high school, but it most definitely was not.
Amira stood up straight.
"What else did you do?"
"It wasn't exactly things I did, but things I thought. Like, you know how Valentine's Day was invented by card companies? What I thought I heard was car companies. Till college, I thought that, like, Toyota and Kia invented Valentine's Day, which I did think was odd, but still a thing that happened. Actually, no, wait. Even worse than that, I thought that the word lesbian had a D on the end, like lesbian, and I thought it was a verb."
"Kelly!"
Amira covered her mouth again.
"No, you didn't."
"I absolutely did," he said. "I thought that one woman could lesbian the other, till I was like 16. Why am I telling you this?"
Amira laughed.
"I honestly don't know, but tell me the breakup line one more time."
Kelly put both hands on the counter and cleared his throat.
"I think it would be best if we went our separate ways
and that those paths never again connected.
That's really beautiful.
Thank you.
Amira leaned against the counter with her hip bones first. She watched Kelly take the $58 wine bottle and tip the remaining liquid into her glass.
Do you want to call me an Uber?
She asked. Kelly set the empty bottle on the tile.
Not really, no.
Amira nodded and said,
okay.
8. Back in New York, long before Catherine was born, Tamra poured wine into 3 glasses. Everyone has to share the most embarrassing moment.
I love when Tamra drinks, Jody said, because she turns into an 11-year-old girl.
The 4 women sat on wiry patio furniture next to plastic shovels, pails, and a kiddie pool covered in leaves in the ivy-surrounded space that was Rachel's backyard. Tiny white lights hung overhead. On the other side of the sliding glass door was a downstairs studio that Rachel used for guests. A queen-sized bed folded out from the wall, where a very little Briar slept with her thumb in her mouth. Tamra's daughters, Imani and Cleo, slept next to her, on the other side of Jody's daughter, who was soon to be a big sister. Jody sipped a club soda with lemon. Rachel's son, Hudson, was in Vermont with his grandma. It was the first time the 4 women were together without the immediate presence of their children. Rachel quietly closed the sliding door with her elbow, and her slippery black hair whipped behind her.
My answer to this question is more of a time period, and it is defined by my son's penis.
She set 4 white plates on top of the table, next to a large pizza with tomatoes, pepper flakes, and basil on top.
Don't tell me this, la 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 la.
Jody raised her hands to her ears. She'd learned 3 days prior that she was pregnant with a little boy, whom she would later name Payne. Her thick red hair glowed as she reached over a large bug-repellent candle for the same slice of pizza as Alix. She retreated and said,
No, Alix, you go first.
It was Jody, whom Alix had first met in the waiting room when Briar had her 4-month checkup. Jody had introduced her to Rachel and Tamra, and Alix could still feel Jody's sweet concern and the gestures she made to make Alix feel at ease. Rachel sat back with her arms at the sides of the patio chair.
In the grocery store, in the line for coffee.
Mommy, a penis is private.
Mommy, you can't play tag with a penis.
Mommy, I have a penis and our dog has a penis and you lost yours, so you need to be more careful.
Oh, God, Tamra said. Why is he being all Freud on you?
Okay, so these guys already know my embarrassing moment, Jody said, turning to Alix. But Prudence went to a church camp with her cousins last summer, and one of her counselors called me in because Prudence had carefully explained that her mommy took little boys and girls into her room and put them in front of a video camera.
Oh, no. Alix laughed.
And the children that cried?
Jody leaned forward. One of her green eyes went wide, and the other closed.
Those were the bad ones, and they don't get to come back again.
Tamra chuckled through her nose.
I remember this.
Rachel shook her head.
I fucking love that kid.
And, Jody held up a finger,
only the good boys and girls got to come back. And mommy puts them on camera more. And when you're on camera, you have to do exactly what mommy says, even if you cry.
Alix said, I'm guessing she wasn't invited back to camp.
I had to go in and everything.
Jody pulled a chunk of crust off her pizza and took a bite.
I was pulling out my business card. I pulled up my website. I became this crazy person sitting in a kid's chair, way too small for my ass, telling them that I'm not a pedophile and that I cast children in feature films.
Tamra looked to Alix.
What does Briar think you do for a living?
Alix picked up her wine and said, Briar is fairly certain that I work at the post office.
To which Tamra replied, Okay, that's not so off.
Hudson thinks I buy books for a living, which is sometimes pretty accurate, Rachel said.
Joe, what does Prue think you do now?
I think I just covered this. Mommy is a pervert.
The women laughed into their wine and mozzarella. Alix looked to Tamra.
And what do Imani and Cleo think you do?
Tamra put down her glass.
Oh, they know I'm a principal.
Oh, how odd, Rachel sighed. Tamra's perfect children are perfectly aware of their mother's perfect job. As she said this, Rachel clasped her hands together at the side of her head as if she were an animated princess. Alix realized that Rachel was quite tipsy, and she felt an affinity for her, this group, this moment. She loved hearing their voices and seeing them take large bites of their pizza and how the sun took so long to go down in the summer. Tamra smiled beneath the cluster of dark freckles that gathered underneath her eyes. When she shook her head, her long, neat dreadlocks shimmered behind her elbows. She was the only one eating her pizza with a fork and knife.
Imani would disagree with you on the perfect job part,